Chapter 1, The Rally. The wall of the subway station entrance cast a narrow shadow on the steps. Tomas emerged from the station into the yellow-orange light of Epsilon Eridani. Though bright, the steps remained cool underfoot all the way up to the street. At the top of the steps, long skinny signs hung from poles flanking the entrance. First Landing, Square South. On his side of the street, skyscraper walls of curved concrete and vast sheets of mirrored glass towered above the sidewalk. A step brought Tomas into glare, reflected from mirrored glass, cladding an upper floor of a high-rise across the street. He squinted and turned his head, and the sounds of downtown McCulloch City pummeled his ears. Rustling feet, the whisper of automobile tires, and the squeak of brakes, and conversations over phones and wearable communicators flooded him. He felt more exposed in downtown McCulloch than he had on any battlefield. Tomas took a breath. He would follow through on Rolston's invitation. Forrester's campaign rally would help him decide about the candidate, one way or the other. He started along the sidewalk toward the square. He held his shoulders back and chest up. Civilians in the latest fashions, one exposed shoulder, sequined necklines plunging to the breastbone, oversized sunglasses doubling as video displays, earbuds curling like cooked plastic shrimp, and those were just the men, loomed in front of Tomas, then veered away at the last moment. They smoothly continued their conversations, as if skills imps had planted in their brains how to walk crowded streets without noticing the people around them. Tomas slowed. How could he find Rolston and Unzai in this crowd? The only answer came from a man's step on his hill. "Keep moving, tourist," the man muttered as he walked by. Tomas picked up his pace to keep with the flow of pedestrians. He neared a walnut-brown awning and cramped chairs and tables of a sidewalk cafe. Half a dozen youthful men in garish clothes stood near a pair of tables, shouting and gesticulating at someone the crowd hid from Tomas. A few more steps, and he found Rolston and Unzai. Rolston's garrison cap sat low on his forehead, nearly touching the top of his augmented reality glasses. The position of the garrison cap accented the sharp lines of his eyebrows and the venom in his green eyes.
"Sit you down, each be damned one of you!"
One of the men, with bulging eyes, in a shirt speckled and iridescent as a trout, slapped the back of his hand against a friend's shoulder. "A warmonger, and a stupid Indiaverite." Another of the men, his teeth partially exposed in a sneer, cocked his head and flicked it back. His voice dripped with smug superiority. "We don't sit down for some lieutenant or whatever from a continent covered in lichen." Rolston's hands clenched into fist. Next to him, Unzai tapped his fingers on his pointed chin and muttered something too quiet for Tomas to catch. Rolston's angry gaze remained locked on the sneering man.
"You don't sit down for me? True, you don't. You only kneel for the Progressive Republic, so you can catch their pubes in your teeth when you..."
Tomas hurried to them. He extended his arms and pressed his palms against Rolston's chest and the sneering man's. He alloyed his voice with steel.
"Enough, both of you."
The sneering young man took a half step back and swatted at Tomas's arm with his hand.
"Or what? You're another warmonger? Hiding a gun to brandish at me?" "We can take these swine with our fist," Rolston said.
"We could," Tomas turned his head, "but we will let them go. He has his right to speak, just as we have ours." Ralston shrugged away from Tomas's hand.
Maybe by law, but by justice? We earned our right to speak in the mud and blood on New Liberty and Nave Ambrosar. You volunteered,
the sneering young man said.
You got what you deserved.
Tomas narrowed his eyes and fixed the sneering man with a scowl.
Man? Boy.
A cocoon boy with enough income to drink overpriced coffee
and buy clothes handcrafted by a tailor.
As if he could know even the tiniest fraction about the soldier's life to dismiss Tomas, Unzai, and Ralston.
What I deserved?
Ralston clenched his fist and leaned forward.
A backstab from you?
Tomas squared his shoulders to the sneering young man. On the other side of Ralston, Unzai did the same. The young man's gaze flicked from side to side. He shifted his weight to his heels, and his sneer curdled into mild fear. His companion in the speckled iridescent shirt leaned closer. This one looked toward the subway station, and his eyes bulged even wider than before. Let it go. The young man's eyes turned in the direction his companion watched. Tomas glanced that way as well. Five men approached, wearing blue jackets and matching pants. On their hips, secured by instant-release adhesive, rode handled batons. An armband ringed their right sleeves, showing a Red Cross Barbie against a blue field. These five men wore garrison caps, similar to Ralston's, but coming to a flat vertical face over the wearer's forehead. On each flat face of their cap stood the dark disc of a camera. Passing civilians veered wide around them. The five men in blue belonged to the Restoration Party's security organization, a thug squad, some of Forrester's opponents called the Bluecoats. The RP's militia, planning street battles if Forrester lost the upcoming election, said others. The young man and his companions quickly sat down. Their rigid backs did not touch their chairs. Their gazes and voices remained amongst themselves. Ralston adjusted his cap to a jaunty angle.
Good afternoon, team leader, he said to a blue coat with crow's feet around humorless eyes and white stripes of rank flanking the cross Barbie on his armband.
Good afternoon to you, Captain.
The Bluecoat team leader nodded to Tomas and Unzai.
Citizens, all well?
Ralston glanced at the young men seated at the nearby tables. His mouth puckered as if to spit cherry pits into the young man's ornate hairstyles.
Well enough.
The Bluecoat team leader squinted at the young men, then nodded with an air of finality.
We'll see you at the rally, Captain?
All of us.
Ralston lifted his hands 20 centimeters to indicate Unzai and Tomas.
Glad to hear it.
The Restoration Party security team walked on toward First Landing Square. Ralston glanced at the lower left corner of his vision.
It's 15:45 already. If we don't go now, we'll be far from the stage.
He led Tomas and Unzai down the sidewalk. The RP security team provided a wake shield. This time, no pedestrians loomed in Tomas's path.
Unzai, Neumann,
Ralston began. Despite being raised here on Challenger, he pronounced Neumann's name correctly enough, Neumann. The thick soles of Ralston's black service dress shoes clacked on the sidewalk.
Why the civvy garb, you two?
Tomas reached inside the collar of his polo shirt and scratched his nape. His topsiders muffled his footfalls.
You know, regs forbid appearing in uniform at partisan political events.
That's right, said Unzai.
Ralston clapped his hand on Tomas's shoulder, squeezed the blue cotton of Tomas's polo shirt. His green eyes danced.
Right, I can trust you two to follow regs. But the regs are a guide, not a lifeline to cling to. Neumann, I've heard your stories about New Liberty and Arden. You deviated from regs to better pound the unis and the PRs. Now I'm doing the same.
The same? Tomas said.
Right. Not all the same. You poor married bastards like my grasp of fashion. Unlike you, if I wore civvy garb, I'd look too much like our lilies of the field back at the cafe.
Ralston laughed. Tomas pressed his lips together. He left Lyssa at home with the boys for this?
You know there are cameras everywhere. What if some higher rank sees video of you?
On the other side of Ralston, Unzai nodded. Ralston gave a jaunty shake of his head.
Higher ranks will attend the rally in uniform. The GF brass is pro-Forrester.
I know, Tomas said. Though all he knew was Armel, rumor. His mouth felt dry. But we're supposed to appear in
Ralston laughed again. Tomas gritted his teeth. Relax, Neumann. If the brass call me on the carpet for taking sides while in uniform, I'll tell them you tried to stop me.
They walked on. Challenger's rapid rotation shrank the shadows of high-rises as Epsilon Eridani neared the third noon of the calendar day. Soon the skyscraper vista opened up to First Landing Square. A ring of streets defined the square's perimeter. They climbed steps to a footbridge, held up by stylus-thin strands of nanotube alloy. Above the crowded streets, sinuous high-rises stretched classy faces into the sky. Tomas surveyed the high-rises, then relaxed. Peacetime. The buildings lacked sniper nest. He, Ralston, and Unzai reached the far end of the footbridge. Two men in gray-black windbreakers and shaded video glasses, Confederal police, studied a pair of Restoration Party bluecoats. The bluecoats stared back. Down the steps from the footbridge, concrete slabs paved most of the square. In two ranks of raised planters, cypresses extended branches like high, thin clouds. 10 meters beyond the inner row of planters, the concrete slab stopped at a four-strand railing. Beyond lay a zone of rippled reddish-brown basalt. 5 standard centuries earlier, the first ship to land on Challenger had softened that rock with the heat of its fusion drive. The LZ remained a monument to the planet's terraformers. At the railing, a small sign showed the cross Barbie and an arrow pointing to the right. Readily visible from 200 meters across the square, a crowd faced a stage. Behind the stage, rising above the foliage of cypresses, a huge backdrop showed another cross Barbie, the Restoration Party's logo, against a red, white, and blue ripple, evoking the Confederated World's flag. A lectern near the front of the stage looked tiny beneath the flag. Next to the logo stood the words, Forrester, for President, 3018, Honor Restored. Halfway between the small sign and the stage stood a line of bluecoats. The nearest one shifted his position to intercept Tomas, Unzai, and Ralston. A chemical sniffer, like a tiny alloyed lizard, rested on his shoulder. The bluecoat's eyes seemed as wide as the camera lens on his cap. He had a smooth face and a voice of naive confidence.
Good afternoon, Captain, citizens. Have you already selected Forrester as your first preference on the ballot?
Yes, absolutely, Ralston said.
Tomas shook his head. Not yet. He leaned toward O'Brien of the Outworld Alliance Party. The smooth-faced bluecoat stood taller.
That will change when you hear Forrester speak. He understands our problems and our only acceptable solution better than any other candidate. He gestured toward a line of waiting people.
Please queue up for a security screen.
Ralston leaned forward and stretched his palm toward the young man.
We can set that aside, can't we? You approve us.
I would if I could, Captain. A temporary railing ran from the rippled basalt field to the outermost row of cypress planters. The queue led to the only passage through the railing, a security scanner crewed by more men in shaded video glasses and dark windbreakers. Tomas said, Conpol doesn't trust you to provide security? The smooth-faced bluecoat shook his head gravely.
We don't trust them, Captain.
Gentlemen, please proceed. Tomas, Ralston, and Unzai started forward, angling toward the rear of the queue. A few steps ahead of them went a solitary man wearing a tan, baggy plastic jacket. He faced away from them, showing only a thick mop of brown hair and a sharp facet of a cheekbone. Unzai tapped his fingers on his chin. His voice carried a disbelieving tone.
That young fellow's listened to too much of Forrester's rhetoric. Conpol wouldn't intentionally fail to protect Forrester.
Ralston's eyebrows arched.
Don't be you naive, Unzai. The older parties and the senior bureaucrats all hate Forrester. His every word gut punches them with a reminder. They surrendered rather than risk their precious capital cities to orbital fires.
He waggled his hands to indicate both McCullough, the planetary capital around them, and Confederal City, the capital of the Confederated Worlds, 4 kilometers east across the lake.
They can't stomach that. They'll pull every string they can to get Conpol looking the other way if an assassin comes after him.
You think they could be that duplicitous? Tomas said. Ralston's brow wrinkled.
Double-dealing? That's it. I feel it in my bones.
They reached the queue and shuffled forward. From the slow progress of the queue and the focused motions of the personnel at the security scanner, the Confederal police seemed serious about security. When they neared the scanner, Tomas's impression grew stronger. Ahead of them, the scanner hummed for long seconds around the man with the baggy jacket and sharp cheekbones. A sharp glance between 2 Conpol agents, and they beckoned the man aside for handheld scanning. He held his arms straight out to his sides while Conpol swept wands over his body. His mouth turned down.
I haven't done anything. You're singling me out because I got my jacket from a fab utility. That's class warfare.
His voice faded as Tomas and Ralston took turns going through the scanner.
There's a good spot, Ralston pointed at one of the cypress planters, about a dozen meters from the stage.
They wound their way through the growing crowd and stopped under the cypress's canopy. A faint citrus scent came from the leaves. On a nearby platform, 2 meters above the ground, audio and video technicians chatted among themselves and prepped their equipment. The crowd filled the space for a while longer. Under the watchful gazes of Restoration Party, Bluecoats, and Conpol agents standing near the front of the stage. Ralston's earlier comment about military personnel in uniform proved true. Amid the civilians stood non-coms and junior officers in Ground Force Service gray and officers in Space Force deep blue. Personnel from each service mostly clumped together. 2 lieutenants provided a rare exception. Though their uniforms differed, they marched by wearing white turbans and beards pinned under their chins. Their long noses made them look like brothers. The turbans and beards suggested they were Sikhs from Nave Ambarsar, a world lost to the Progressive Republic at the end of the war. A few minutes before 1600, the halves of the backdrop parted. The first notes of an old patriotic song, Challenger, Gem of the Spaceways, played from elevated speakers. The crowd hushed and focused on the stage. Instead of the candidate, out came 4 men, 2 suits of gray and two of blue. Not the service's dress uniforms, but civilian suits cut in Ground Force and Space Force style. The men had unlined faces and wrinkled eyes, produced by decades of rejuvenation treatments.
"The budget cuts and finger-pointing pushed them into early retirement," Rolston said.
The retired officers took measured steps forward and stopped in a gapped line just behind the lectern. From the speakers boomed an announcer's voice, "Ladies and gentlemen, please stand at attention, and gentlemen, remove your hats as together we sing the Confederated World's Anthem." The crowd stirred in compliance. Tomas clapped his hands against the sides as the anthem began. Rolston held his cap over his heart and sung along with gusto. "Confederated worlds, we stand on guard for thee." As the final word echoed around the square, the halves of the backdrop parted again. Two aides, one man and one woman, scurried out and held the backdrop halves. The announcer said, "Ladies and gentlemen, your next president, Roderick Forster." Cheers and applause erupted from the crowd. Cameras and parabolic microphones swung toward the stage. Forster emerged from the backdrop and strode toward the lectern. His aides dropped the backdrop and hurried after him. Forster stood head and shoulders above them. Almost exactly 2 meters? No. Assuming the retired officers stood not much taller than average, recalibrating Forster's height when he reached them put him at 1.90 meters, still taller than the average man raised on Challenger. Forster shook the hand of one of the Ground Force retirees and laughed at something the other one said. Forster's teeth gleamed in rows as regular as the line of cypresses. He took his hand back from the Ground Force retiree, then turned to say something to one of the former Space Force officers. After a brief clap on the other Space Force retiree's shoulder, two steps brought Forster to the lectern. His dark blonde hair swept back, remained fixed against a sudden breeze sighing through the square. His hazel eyes gleamed as he waved to the cheering crowd. Toward the sides of the backdrop, at the height of the cross Barbie and the campaign slogan, chameleon cloth panels woven into the fabric came to life. Each showed a close-up of Forster, captured by a camera around the rally. A tan suffused his clear skin. The few wrinkles at the corners of his eyes and the few gray hairs at his temples implied he combined the wisdom of years with a vigor of relative youth. Tomas looked away from the video panels. The immense close-ups were too much to take in, even if they only magnified a sight he could have seen with his naked eye. At the lectern, Forster pointed his hand at someone in the crowd and nodded. His head swiveled to Tomas, Unzai, and Rolston, and he smiled as if he saw old friends. In a moment, he looked toward someone else. Tomas clapped more quietly.
"Do you know him?"
"What?"
Tomas raised his voice over the crowd noise.
"Do you know him, or he you?"
"Never met him," Rolston said. His mouth remained slightly open. "Yet."
The smile of recognition had to be some politician's trick. Tomas pressed his lips together. A leader like Forster aspired to be should abstain from such tricks. A thought bubbled up from Tomas's subconscious and relaxed his mouth.
"The skills imps implanted into your brain 12 skills or more for managing enlisted men. He's the same as you."
Somewhere in the crowd arose a chant.
"Honor restored! Honor restored!"
The chant built for a few moments, and Forster's smile beamed at the crowd. Finally, he pushed his hands down through the air. The chant died out. Forster nudged the lectern's microphone closer to his mouth.
"Fellow citizens,"
Good afternoon.
Even without the microphone, his deep, resonant voice would have carried to Tomas, I am deeply honored to see so many Challengerites before me who know the struggle we face. Forster continued his speech. From time to time, Ralston nodded, and occasionally emphasized the gesture with a poke in the ribs or a whisper to Unzai or Tomas. Overhead, a two-man ornithopter with a Conpol logo on its side hovered on slow beats of its mechanical wings. There are those, Forster said, and his enunciation of the last word drew echoes of disdain from the crowd, who say I'm blind to the reality of the unity and the progressive republic. They say I can't see the reality of the human galaxy since the end of the war. They say new liberty belongs to the unity. Forster looked at the brothers in turbans. They say Nave Ambrasar belongs to the PR. And because I say otherwise, they call me blind. Voices in the crowd hissed. Someone shouted, shame! Forster's words tugged at parts of Tomas, like a magnet summoning iron. But other parts of Tomas, metal alloyed with the mud and blood of New Liberty and Arden, remained immobile. But they are the ones who are blind, Forster said. For I have seen the Progressive Republic far more clearly than they ever will. I saw its weapons rend my ship. I spent 2 years as its prisoner. The Progressive Republic lifted its mask, and I stared its inhuman monstrosity in the face.
Tomas shuddered.
He remembered a scene like this on Arden, crawling under dripping blood, pursuing the elusive PR agent. Its malevolence will not rest until its tyranny enslaves every citizen of the Confederated Worlds. In the sight of the God I worship, I swear I shall not rest until the unity and Progressive Republic's threat is broken for all time. Someone passed behind Tomas. An elbow brushed Tomas's back. Pardon me, said a slightly familiar male voice. Sure, Tomas said, while focusing most of his attention on the stage. Then an intuition pricked him. He glanced over his shoulder. The voice belonged to the man with sharp cheekbones and baggy plastic jacket. He wormed through the crowd toward the nearby cypress planter. The crowd erupted in applause and cheers. Ralston glanced around, then pumped his fist and shouted, Hoorah! Tomas craned his neck to keep an eye on the man in the baggy tan jacket. Sweat suddenly bloomed on his forehead, and not from the rays of Epsilon Eridani. Pardon me, he said to Ralston and Unzai. He sidled through the crowd, following the man in the baggy jacket. He stopped with a screen of spectators between them, slicing his view of the man into vertical strips. The man stood on tiptoes, with his belly against the flat concrete ledge rimming the planter. The bottom of his jacket dangled between the planter wall and his leg. Something bulged in the jacket's front pockets, with an intent look in his eyes harmonizing with the sharp angle of his cheekbones, he dug through the planter's loose soil with both hands. He rose from the planter holding a transparent bag. Soil clung to the thick plastic and obscured the object inside. A bluish-gray shape, a thin cylinder about 20 centimeters long. The man brushed the dirt from the bag, then plunged it into one of his jacket pockets. Suddenly, his thick mop of hair flowed with his head, as if he sensed he was watched. Tomas jolted his gaze up to Forster. From the corner of his eye, he glimpsed the man's sharp cheekbone and newly hunched shoulders. The path
stretches before us, Forster's voice echoed from the speakers. The men's shoulders eased back and down, the weight of hands and more in his pockets pulled taut his jacket. Forster continued his speech. The way is long and difficult, but it is far more dangerous for us to heed the fool's counsel of the complacent, to hide our heads in virtual realities, and do nothing to gird against the unity and progressive republic's renewed aggression. The man snaked closer to the stage. His jacket sleeves rippled, as if his hands worked at some intricate assembly in his pockets. Tomas's peripheral vision fell away. His eyes became a scope locked on the man. "Out of the way," he said to the people around him. "Move it." He pressed hard on elbows and shoulders. Angry looks and muttered curses followed him. He barely noticed. He craned his neck and peered after the man. The man kept his head facing the stage and his hands in his jacket pockets. He worked at something behind the jacket's closed zipper. "For aggress, they will." Forster's hand chopped the air. "The Progressive Republic and the Unity have not chosen peace, but a truce, which they shall break the moment they conclude us too weak to defend ourselves." The men stopped behind a clump of spectators, 6 meters from Forster. The edges of Tomas's vision turned gray and spotty. Tomas shoved through the crowd, no apologies, too focused to speak. Forster's voice thundered. "Elect me, and I vow to put forth every effort to defend us from our enemies and neutralize the threat of our domestic foes." Tomas came within a few steps of the man, behind him and to his right. The man's hand emerged from his jacket pocket, a dark blue pistol. The man wrapped his left hand around his right, thumbs aligned under the slide. Tomas lunged forward, knee to the back of the assassin's legs, left hand on far shoulder, right arm reaching under the assassin's arms. The pistol roared as he toppled the assassin backward over his knee. Another shot, another, high into the air over Forster. His ringing ears muffled the crowd's screams. The assassin collapsed. Tomas jumped on him. His right hand clutched the assassin's right forearm, keeping the pistol aimed into the air. His left hand pushed the assassin's head against the concrete. Pain bloomed around Tomas's eye. He winced. The assassin pulled back his left fist for another punch. Tomas grunted. He shoved the assassin's head harder against the concrete. He shifted his left knee into the assassin's neck. "Drop the pistol!" The crowd had backed away. A glance at the stage showed the now empty lectern. Conpol in dark windbreakers crouched around two of their peers lying on Forster. From somewhere at ground level, dimly heard through the ringing in Tomas's ears, male voices shouted at one another with the intensity of soldiers in combat. The assassin dropped the pistol. It banged against the small bones of Tomas's hand as it tumbled to the ground. The assassin's face turned purple. Yet he sneered at Tomas. "We lost," the assassin hissed. "This time." He gnashed his teeth together in a brief but complex rhythm. Bluecoats arrived first, young men, their eyebrows low in a look of brittle toughness. The tips of their batons turned tiny circles through the air. "He swallowed a lethe capsule," Tomas said. "Empty his stomach before it dissolves." Otherwise, the assassin's memories of the recent days would evaporate into a mist no brain scanner could read. The assassin barked a laugh. "Lethe capsules? You want to fight the Progressive Republic and you think lethe capsules are state of the art?" The young bluecoats gave each other puzzled looks. Finally, the one with team leader stripes on his armband said, "How can we empty his stomach?" Boots clomped closer. "With your baton, virgin," the speaker's voice sounded like some gruff uncle. He had blonde hair like a wheat field after harvest, on some planet where people chose to grow food by farming. Enough wrinkles edged his authoritative gray eyes to mark him as a few years older.
His armband showed more stripes than the team leader. That's how he did it dirt side in the war. Make him puke.
The young team leader nodded. He stepped forward and aimed his baton's tip at the assassin's mouth. The older blue coat sharpened his voice.
You aren't having sex with your high school sweetheart for the first time. You're banging some off-base whore. Like this.
He wrapped his hand over the young team leader's and shoved the baton into the assassin's mouth. The assassin gagged. Muscles clenched under his jacket, and he twisted his head to the side. His vomit hit the concrete. One of the young bluecoats hot-footed 20 centimeters back in a vain effort to keep his boots clean. His comrades chuckled. The older bluecoat poked the toes of his boot through the clumps of vomit.
Where's the damn capsule? He toed the assassin's ribs. How long ago you swallow it? What did I tell you about lethal capsules, morons?
The assassin said. Without rancor, the older bluecoat kicked the assassin in the belly. The assassin gasped for breath.
That's a violation. Undue force.
The older bluecoat drew his foot back for another kick.
That's enough, Sergeant, Tomas said.
And how did he know the older bluecoat had been a sergeant? The older bluecoat stepped back. His gray eyes remained unabashed.
Listen to the civilian, a deep voice said.
Three Conpola agents now waited nearby. The older bluecoat looked up at them.
About time you showed up.
One of the Conpola agents, with the dark skin and coiled hair of a Garvey's World native, shot the older bluecoat a cold look, then stepped toward the assassin.
You are under arrest for the attempted murder of a candidate for Confederal office. You will be taken into custody and subjected to interrogation augmented by brain scanning.
To his fellow agents, he said,
Grab him!
The other two Conpol agents went toward the assassin's sides. The Restoration Party security team stepped forward, threatening to block them. The chief agent swept back a panel of his jacket and set his fist on his hip near a holstered pistol. His other hand pulled video glasses from his eyes. He glowered at the older bluecoat.
Do I look like I want to take shit from a pack of Boy Scouts?
The older bluecoat's face turned unreadable. Definitely a former sergeant. He stared back at the chief Conpol agent, then slowly turned to his men.
We did our job. We know what really happened, even if Conpol tried to take the credit. Let them take him.
The Restoration Party security team stepped back. The Conpol agents lifted the assassin to his feet. One Conpol agent cuffed the assassin's hands behind his back. The other shackled his ankles together with a short chain. The assassin's forehead crinkled. He looked around. The Conpol agents, the crowd, the stage. His thick mop of hair gave him a dull look. Tomas's breath caught. The assassin acted as if he recognized nothing, as if he had no idea what brought him here. Inhale. A breath in Tomas's chest, the next one in his belly, and he could think. The assassin must have taken a week or so to select cypress planters and hide the parts of his pistol. A lethe capsule could erase memories that far back, even a little further. Yet even if he'd taken a lethe capsule, the assassin must have planned to shoot Forrester for months, and that memory would remain. A cold feeling trickled down the inside of Tomas's chest.
He didn't swallow a lethe capsule.
The chief Conpol agent kept most of his attention on the assassin's puzzled face.
We'll make that call.
The chief agent nodded to the two men guarding the assassin. They walked the assassin away. The stunned crowd quickly vacated their path, then slowly refilled the space left in their wake. Wide-eyed gazes returned to the stage. Forrester stood at the lectern. Conpol agents and Restoration Party bluecoats reached for his elbows, like fretting wives or timid subordinates urging retreat. Forrester kept all his attention on the crowd.
Fellow citizens!
Forrester's voice boomed from the speakers. Fellow citizens, you have seen our enemies in action.
He jutted his finger at the assassin and the Conpol agents escorting him away. They see the threat I pose to their heinous plans. He is not the first, and he will not be the last, to try to bury me. But I am not the message. I am merely a mirror, dazzling our foes' shifty eyes with the light of truth. For I am merely one of millions of true sons of the Confederated Worlds, joined by true patriots such as this man. He extended his hand toward Tomas. And we will do whatever is needed to keep our worlds strong and free. Forster's words echoed around the square. After a moment, someone in the crowd broke the silence with slow applause. Others joined in then, with livelier applause and a few ragged cheers. Even so, the civilian faces around Tomas still showed shock and surprise. A man with a lined face and a collar pin from the KIA Families Association came closer to Tomas. His hands probed for Tomas's. You saved him. Thank you, sir. Thank you. Other faces turned to Tomas, eyes wide, lips parted, as if they beheld a worker of wonders. Tomas wanted to squirm. He shrugged. Anyone would have done the same if they'd noticed the assassin. The older bluecoat stuck his baton back onto the adhesive strip on his pants. But you're the one who did, he suddenly angled his head, looking like he listened to someone through an earbud. Sir, yes, he's with me. He nodded once, a crisp bob of his chin. Yes, sir. He turned to Tomas. Forrester would like you to join him on stage.
Tomas blinked.
His head swiveled, scanning the crowd for Rolston or Unzai to deflect Forrester's interest in him. Keep me out of politics. Someone in a gray jacket and trousers pressed through the crowd. Energy flashed in Rolston's green eyes. He clapped Tomas on the shoulder.
Neumann, I'm tingling with awe. What about the shooter got under your skin?
Tomas shrugged.
I can't tell you. I just knew.
The older bluecoat leaned his square head toward Tomas.
Sir, Forrester is waiting.
Waiting? Rolston gaped.
Neumann, what in the hell is holding you back? Climb you up there.
I don't want to get involved in politics, Tomas finally said.
When you stopped the shooter, you stuck your hand in the monkey trap.
Rolston leaned toward Tomas's ear.
When Forrester wins, you'll ride the promotion fast track. Give you me just one hand up when you get a chance is all I ask you. Remember you us little people, will you?
What? I'm going back to work on one day same as you. Rolston chuckled.
One day, perhaps. But you won't be staying long.
Tomas rotated his upper body, trying to pull his shoulder from under Rolston's hand.
It's 2 weeks till the election. He won't remember, if he even wins.
Rolston lowered his hand to Tomas's upper back.
You saved his life, Neumann. He will remember, not if he wins, when.
He shoved Tomas toward the stage. Tomas took two steps before he could think. Forrester's voice boomed from the loudspeakers.
Here he comes, the hero of the hour.
1,000 eyes seemed to cast smoldering eyes onto Tomas's skin. Applause and cheers struck him like a stiff rain. He trudged forward until he stood near the edge of the stage. On stage, two blue coats came forward. They bent their knees and extended their banded arms toward Tomas. He lifted his right arm, but then surprise froze it in midair. Forrester strode around the lectern.
I'll help him, he told the bluecoats.
They stepped back. Forrester reached down from the edge of the stage. He and Tomas grasped forearms, and he pulled Tomas up.
Thank you for saving my life, Forrester said.
Though low in volume and competing with the cheers of the crowd, his voice still resonated through Tomas's mind.
What is your name?
Tomas Neumann. Law enforcement? Military? Ground force. Forster beamed, though a wry note pulled down the corners of his mouth. He moved his head closer to Tomas's ear. The spectacle of the rally, the noise of the crowd, all receded. I know my old comrades at Space Force dismiss your contributions. It pains me to say it. I dismissed them too, years ago. But inter-service rivalry is part of what led us to defeat. Undoing it will be part of what will restore us our rightful place in the galaxy. I'm glad to hear that, Mr. Forrester. I agree completely. Tomas's memories of mud and blood softened. To get to the destination this man sees for the Confederated Worlds, the price in lives and pain is worth paying. A glint filled Forrester's eyes. He spoke with leonine certainty. I see I can rely on you.